This podcast was recorded in June 2016, and as expected, everything changes way too fast in technology. So between the time we recorded this podcast and the time you're listening to it, VMware added at least a few new things to the VMware Integrated OpenStack. First, they now support as many hypervisors per OpenStack region as a single vCenter would support. So there's no 250 hypervisor limit anymore. Second, they support 512 nodes per transport zone, no longer 256. And they can use now the VLAN-based VDS mode in production with the latest OpenStack version. And I'm positive that VMware announced a number of new goodies during VMworld 2016, but we're not going there. That's stuff for another podcast. And now for the podcast with Marcos Hernandez. Welcome to Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on software-defined everything. Today, we're looking forward to a cloudy episode that started long time ago with a very short email from Marcos Hernandez from VMware saying, well, you know, in one of the podcasts, there were some assertions about the maturity of Neutron and what it is and how OpenStack works and whether the customers are doing it in production or not. And I do have some hands-on experience with that stuff, so let's talk about that. And of course, I immediately said yes. Then it took us months to schedule the whole thing, primarily because I'm so busy, it's not Marcos' fault. And here we are today with Marcos Hernandez from VMware on the line. Marcos, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me today. Thank you, Nick, for having me. And I look forward to our session here today.
Now that you mentioned Nick, of course, we have someone to keep me honest. So with us is Nick Buraglio. Nick, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Fantastic.
Everybody doing well, yeah.
Summer is coming into my country eventually.
Yeah, it's definitely starting to get warm here in the Midwest. We hit about 85 degrees yesterday, and it was fairly humid.
Whatever that is in metric units.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't use the metric system. That would make too much sense.
Yeah, that would be too mainstream. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. Marcos, you told me that you were a networking engineer in your previous life and working for a company where I was actually running trainings. So what brought you to NSX?
I spent a long time at Cisco doing data center solutions. I also was part of a project, an incubation project that was focused on cloud services for the small business. So that was my first introduction to cloud and the concept of cloud and cloud networking. All those activities actually helped me. And after a while, I decided that that's something that I wanted to pursue further. So I started following the SDN conversation that was being had at the time. I was very lucky to have been presented with an opportunity to come join VMware right after VMware acquired Nicira, that very highly publicized acquisition that brought all that networking and software-defined networking know-how into VMware. And that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years. So the answer to your question is NSX was the reason that really brought me over to VMware.
But now you are working with OpenStack, right?
Yes. Very early in my engagements here at VMware, and because I had had some OpenStack exposure in my previous job at Cisco when I was doing FlexBot, I joined a small team in the company that is solely dedicated to promoting OpenStack with VMware technologies. So I'm part of that team. It is still a small team inside of the networking and security business unit, the business unit that owns the NSX platform. But my role is specific, specialized support and pre-sale support for OpenStack and VMware NSX integration opportunities.
Okay, now most service providers that I've met that were talking about OpenStack wanted to run it on KVM. I've seen few people that were considering OpenStack with anything but VMware approach. Who would want to use OpenStack on top of VMware technologies and why?
Right. There are multiple reasons for that. And by the way, your statement earlier is a very common, I don't want to call it a misunderstanding, but it's a very common, I guess, misunderstanding of the hypervisor options that are available when we talk about OpenStack-based clouds or based infrastructure as a service cloud. KVM is definitely the hypervisor, the top hypervisor choice when we see OpenStack out there in the field. By far, it has the highest penetration in all these OpenStack clouds, but VMware is making inroads. And vSphere is emerging as a tremendous alternative to KVM. And the main reason why someone would want to do OpenStack on vSphere, or let me say OpenStack on VMware in general, as of right now, we are the only vendor, and hopefully this is not going to sound too salesy, but we're the only vendor that actually owns the compute, the network, and the storage layers, the infrastructure layers on top of which you would deploy OpenStack. So in a way, we are a company that can offer a customer that is exploring OpenStack, can offer them that proverbial single throat to choke, right? If you have a case, if you have a problem, if you have a question, we can actually handle all three dimensions of the underlying infrastructure that is running OpenStack. And because we own all that, and now we, with VMware Integrated OpenStack, which is our own OpenStack distribution, we're also participating as an OpenStack vendor in the OpenStack community. We can provide an integrated experience when doing private cloud running on OpenStack, and actually covers the entire lifecycle of your cloud, from design to deploy services and then support and maintenance. So that would be one of the reasons that customers would find attractive when doing business with us. But on the more technical front, which I think it's where we want to focus today.
Yeah, enough of marketing.
Exactly. So on the more technical side, if we take, for example, vSphere, the architecture of vSphere and the penetration of vSphere as really the top hypervisor, and I happen to believe the best hypervisor in the market. For years and years, you have all these organizations that have created all these processes and have optimized the consumption of vSphere in their environment. They understand it. They know how to configure it. They know how to design for it. And what we're doing when we talk about OpenStack running on top of vSphere is basically telling those users, that community, that they will not lose all of that investment and technical knowledge. Right? If you are very happy with the way in which your clusters are being optimized with features like DRS, Distributed Resource Scheduler, or HA, vSphere HA, these are popular things that people use today in their vSphere environment. That investment there, that knowledge is not incompatible with an OpenStack project when you put OpenStack on top of vSphere. So what we have there, what we have designed or created, it's a plugin for Nova in this specific case of compute, Nova being the compute project in OpenStack, a plugin that essentially translates Nova API calls for instantiating compute capacity on top of vSphere. It translates those Nova API calls to vSphere API calls. One of the most interesting aspects of that integration is that from a Nova perspective, Nova doesn't see individual hypervisors. In your typical KVM deployment, each and every hypervisor is running an instance of Nova Compute that has to be registered with the Nova API layer and Nova API services. In our model, the resolution for compute is not an individual compute node. It is a vSphere cluster. And hopefully your listeners are familiar with that. But if they're not, a vSphere cluster is nothing more than an aggregation of hypervisors combined and aggregated under a common configuration construct called a cluster. So hypervisors in a cluster share, for example, networking configuration. They're typically the same platform in terms of hardware, et cetera, et cetera. So when you put hypervisors in this cluster, Nova doesn't see individual hypervisors. It sees a vSphere cluster. And what that gives the cloud administrator is the ability to leverage all these intra-cluster services that I was talking about earlier, DRS, HA, host maintenance. For example, if you want to do maintenance on a host, you put in maintenance mode. The host will immediately evacuate all the VMs to another running host, and then you can do whatever you want or whatever it is that you need to do with that host, all without notifying the OpenStack Nova layer about that. You don't have to decommission that specific hypervisor from the OpenStack layer. OpenStack, from that perspective, is none the wiser. So you leverage all these intra-cluster services. vMotion is another good example. You can move workloads around without necessarily notifying Nova about that. And when you compare that strategy with KVM, you can see some of the differences. I also have some comments around the networking piece, because not only do we integrate with Nova and vSphere, but we also integrate Neutron, the networking project, with NSX. And the strategy is very similar there. There is a plugin that is in charge of translating Neutron API calls to NSX RESTful API calls. So when a tenant or an OpenStack user creates a network, a Neutron network, that gets translated into a RESTful API call that will instantiate, for example, a logical switch in NSX, which is nothing more than an overlay network. So that plugin is there to take care of that translation. And when you do that, when you use NSX, instead of, for example, what happens in the reference implementation of Neutron that is based on Open vSwitch, you have a true software-defined infrastructure platform that you can troubleshoot, you can upgrade, you can actually grow or shrink without necessarily impacting all the consumption that is happening from Neutron.
A few questions before we move forward. In the OpenStack distro from VMware, the hypervisor is ESXi.
Correct.
There is no way of using KVM as the hypervisor.
There is no way to do that. That is correct.
Which also answers the second question. So the NSX we are talking about is NSXv and not NSX for multiple hypervisors.
That would be correct, but it's a nuanced situation. And if you want, I can elaborate.
Of course. That's why we are here for.
Exactly. So you're absolutely right. VMware has an OpenStack distribution called VMware Integrated OpenStack. We are an OpenStack vendor, of course. That distribution is aimed at providing an out-of-the-box integration experience with our own products. On the compute side, you have vSphere, which I was talking about earlier. On the networking side, you have NSX. And then you have, on the storage side, it actually, the communication happens through vCenter, but you have vSphere data stores. And that is the model that VIO, VMware Integrated OpenStack, supports. You're correct in that NSX today for VIO is NSX vSphere, NSX optimized for vSphere. It's the NSX that probably your listeners use and know, and it's the NSX that we promote. But VMware, and I see this as an important thing that VMware is doing, we have not forgotten about the fact that there are many other hypervisor choices out there. So we have a multi-hypervisor platform that is being revamped, is being relaunched. The placeholder name for that platform is NSXT, NSX Transformers, and it was actually announced a few weeks ago in limited availability because, you know, it is the first release. You want to be careful, right? And you want to qualify the use cases, et cetera, et cetera. But it is a multi-hypervisor platform. And in the last version of VMware Integrated OpenStack, we are adding a configuration option that allows VMware Integrated OpenStack to interoperate with NSX Transformers. Our OpenStack will be multi-hypervisor from a networking perspective. Now, what's interesting is that the same is not happening on the compute front. We are not, currently, do not have plans to support KVM as a compute option. And as one of my technical colleagues here in the company would put it, the reason is very simple. VMware is probably the worst company to support KVM from a compute perspective. The reason why we do it for the network is that we have a lot of know-how from the NYSERA acquisition. The NYSERA team basically founded OVS, Open vSwitch, which is the de facto choice for KVM-based technology when you do OpenStack. The NYSERA team also started OVSDBE, which added configuration capabilities to Open vSwitch. More recently, a small team in VMware has been working on something called OVEN, Open Virtual Networking, which is a lightweight control plane for OVS. So we know OVS, we know the networking inside of KVM. There is KVM DNA from a networking perspective at VMware. But on the compute side, we don't have that know-how. And I will be the first one to admit that. So if we were to support a compute option other than vSphere in our distribution, I think we would be opening a can of worms. I don't think that we would deliver the support quality that our customers would expect.
So by default, if I buy VMware Integrated OpenStack, I get the NSXv version. There is an option to use the NSX Transformers, and obviously there are independent Neutron plugins that allow me to use either NSXv or NSX for multiple hypervisors or NSX Transformers with a vanilla OpenStack distro.
That is 100% correct. all of the plugins that we incorporate into our own distribution are actually upstream and are readily available for anyone who wants to integrate those plugins with a do-it-yourself OpenStack, or if they want to work with an OpenStack vendor and integrate those plugins. Over time, those plugins are actually included with a core distribution, so you get them anyways. But in our GitHub, users can actually see plugins. And what's interesting, and this is an interesting fact, is that we publish these plugins to our GitHub, and typically the version, the compatible version of OpenStack is ahead of what we do in VIO. It is very interesting. So right now, there is a plugin for NSXV that works with Mitaka, for example. You can use it right now. You can download it from GitHub. However, VIO, our own VIO, is not Mitaka yet. It's Kilo. So it's going to take a while to get there. So in a way, the open source community gets access to integration options that at VMware, we're probably still a little behind in integrating. And the reasons for that are hopefully understandable, right? You want to test, you want to validate. I mean, you want to create the go-to-market strategy, et cetera, right? But yeah, that's actually a fact. You can get versions of a plugin that are more recent than what we do in our own distribution.
Just to kind of recap what you were saying before, we kind of went down the use case of KVM as a hypervisor versus VMware is the backend. And to me, just to sort of simplify that, it seems like it's really a choice of supportability versus licensing cost, really, at the end of the day. Because if you've got the in-house knowledge, you're probably going to go with the KVM solution because you don't have to pay the licensing fees. And if you already have deep in-house VMware knowledge, or you don't have any knowledge of this, you're going to go with the solution that you essentially purchase as part of the acquisition of the product, right? You get the, like you said, the single throat to choke. So I just kind of wanted to recap that for my own clarification. But I also am interested in, you talked about how the orchestrator pieces sort of obfuscate or simplify, I guess is a better description of the single host versus the VMware cluster. To me, it seems like that would improve scalability a little bit. Is that actually true?
Yes and no. And unfortunately, it's a kind of a vague answer. I can tell you in terms of numbers and performance where we are right now. Before I do that, Nick, if you don't mind, let me take a step back. You said something about licensing. And obviously, all vendors, OpenStack vendors and infrastructure vendors are trying to monetize OpenStack, right?
Yeah,
for,
of course.
For VMware, our play, given the architecture that we have created, the prerequisites for this architecture to actually operate correctly are very specific. So when we look at our OpenStack customer base, from a VIO perspective, NSX vSphere, they all look exactly the same. The consumption of the APIs is different. Everybody's doing an OpenStack for different use cases. But in terms of the infrastructure, they all look exactly the same. At VMware, this was done on purpose, right? Because it provides a better way for us to support all these customers across the board. So what I'm saying is that for us, the monetization of OpenStack is very much a license play. We want to give you reasons or create more stickiness for things like vSphere and NSX and all that. For other companies that don't necessarily own all these infrastructure components, what we're seeing is that their journey to monetizing OpenStack is a services play. So they benefit from customization. They benefit from customers wanting to create snowflakes, create very specific OpenStack configurations because you have to go to them for upgrades and maintenance and all that. And that's perfectly valid. I just wanted to point out that difference. We're all after, I guess, the same dollars for the projects, but we are coming at it in different ways.
No, I don't want to spend too much time on that. I just really wanted to sort of clarify it for my own knowledge, you know, as somebody that would think about what's my purchase experience going to be and how is that going to relate to other things? Because that's typically how I have to evaluate stuff. But again, you know, I definitely appreciate the clarification on that.
And what you said about supportability is 100% correct. People are naturally going to gravitate towards the solution that they're more comfortable with. And if that happens to be KVM, not surprisingly, you know, you're going to see OpenStack on KVM. Absolutely.
Yeah. From an architecture perspective, it sort of boils down to the age old build versus buy kind of thing, right? At some level.
Exactly. And one notion that we're trying to I don't think we're going to be successful or diffuse in this because it's impossible, but is this notion of free in OpenStack, right? Free as in what? Is OpenStack free as in free speech, or is OpenStack free as in a free puppy? Right? I mean, there are some nuances there. You had a point earlier about, or a question about scalability and performance. And this is where I would like to get real. Our solution today scales VIO running on vSphere and NSX. It scales to around 250 hypervisors. And our largest customer is probably around 8,000 VMs. So this numbers are definitely very adequate for like an enterprise use case. But if you're talking about the service provider use case, these numbers are really, really bad. I mean, let's just face it. Scalability is one of the dimensions that we evaluate when proposing OpenStack. Is how big are you going to be? How big are you planning to go? Customers, when they tell us that, that's a very easy decision for us. Do we pursue this opportunity and try to promote vSphere as a choice here? Or because they want to do 10,000 hypervisors, I mean, we're just simply not even in the picture. So that's something that I would like your listeners to think about, because it is one of the decisions that they're going to have to make. So not surprisingly, we're seeing our OpenStack resonate more with the enterprises, the enterprise use case, right? Enterprises that, you know, where 250 hypervisors, 250 compute nodes are, it's actually a very big cloud. In a service provider, that's probably, it's not even a number that they would even consider, right? So, right. You know, we're seeing our OpenStack be more favored by enterprise customers and not so much by SPs. That is a reality. And I think the scalability has to do with that. And why do we scale to those limits? Because we have to live within the constraints of vCenter. vCenter itself supports 1,000 hypervisors in a single vCenter domain, but we have not validated that many with our OpenStack. So we kind of advertise 250 as the high watermark there.
So that's the number you actually validated.
That is correct. It's a soft limit, but it is a limit.
So from the architectural perspective, one instance of Nova is tied to one instance of vCenter, which limits you to vCenter limits.
That is correct.
And then you said, well, but for practical reasons, we will quote a lower number because we actually tested that.
That is correct. That is exactly correct. Our test bed is handling the capacity and numbers that I just shared.
And if you want to have multiple vCenters, then you must run multiple OpenStack instances, like multiple regions, right?
That would be absolutely correct. Yes.
Yeah, and on top of that, you can run the monitoring system, the dashboards, right?
Yes, that is correct. The multi-site situation or a multi-cloud situation, the approach that we're taking is using, as you correctly mentioned, Nova regions to separate all these different OpenStack control planes. Imagine, for example, two vCenters with two VMware integrated OpenStack or two OpenStacks from anyone really integrated with those two vCenters. For all intents and purposes, those are two completely separate clouds. If you want to link those clouds, one of the options that we provide is using Nova regions. You have a region for vCenter 1, a region for vCenter 2. They're, like I said, completely independent clouds. And then you can probably look at a federation of some services. The one that comes to mind that is kind of low-hanging fruit is Keystone. You federate Keystone, you give the tenant the illusion of single sign-on, right? They use the same credentials to basically authenticate against each cloud independently, but with the same credentials. So you create this illusion of single point of, I guess, API consumption. But in reality, when you're dictating, when you're instantiating VMs and instances and all that, you have to determine, deterministically pick a region. So you can say, okay, this goes to my VIO 1 region, or this goes to my VIO 2 region, or this goes to my VIO 1 region, and this goes to my KVM region. So a way to get to multi-hypervisor support in an OpenStack cloud where you want to use vSphere and KVM is this approach of using Nova regions with a Keystone integration and federation.
Now, just to clarify that, when you said you have to say, I want to run this VM in this region, it's actually a different URL to call. It's a different API entry point, right?
That is correct. Yes.
So you execute API calls on one host name for one region and on a different host name for a different region.
That is correct. Yes.
Now, what if I want to link the tenant networks between these two regions? Can I use NSX for that?
Today, we cannot. The capabilities for NSX are there since a couple of releases ago, and with the cross vCenter capabilities that vSphere included or provided in vSphere 6, which is our latest vSphere release, NSX is now a multi-site platform. You can link multiple vCenters, and you can link multiple NSX managers, which is our management plane for NSX and also happens to be our API server for integration with solutions like OpenStack Neutron. So you can link all these services together, and there are primary roles that you would expect and secondary roles. There are synchronization services that make sure that all databases are synchronized. And we introduced this notion in NSX of universal objects, universal logical switch, universal routers, universal firewall rules. These universal objects, as of today, are invisible to OpenStack, are invisible to Neutron. But in a future release of the plugin, and obviously a future release of our own OpenStack distribution VIO, we will be able to instantiate universal objects. You will be able to create a universal logical switch that appears in the vCenter NSX pair in site one, as well as in the NSX vCenter pair on site two. And that would be a Neutron network that will span those two sites. The good news is that the underlying platform, the platform being NSX, already has the capability. We just have to figure out the implementation, the plugin, and the corresponding consumption and use cases, right? I mean, why are you doing this? And we need to understand that. That is definitely something that is coming.
Well, I can tell you why I would want to do that. If I have two data centers for redundancy reasons, and I would want to have them as two regions, so if I lose one OpenStack, I don't lose visibility into everything. And then I need to link the intra-tenant networks between the two regions because every tenant wants to have his own backend communication channel.
I understand. I completely agree with that. That would be a very good use case for this. Absolutely.
So you touched on something here just now I've been trying to figure out. And that's you've got two data centers and you want to create those as two different regions. Can we touch briefly on how the interconnect of that functions, if there are any limits between geographic locations and distances or anything like that? What are the technical details of my East Coast and my West Coast regions / data centers, and how do they talk to each other?
In this case, and by the way, unfortunately, we don't have any customers right now doing this. So my opinions are going to be based on the understanding of the feature and the architecture that we support, not necessarily learnings from the field or of an actual customer doing this. I just want to be very honest about that.
So we are at it works in PowerPoint stage.
Yes.
Okay.
You know what? That's a perfect summary. There is an actual implementation in VIO, or you can do this with any OpenStack, but in VIO, we actually have a little switch there where you can say, okay, give me another region, another horizon region. And what we do is we reskin the landing page for Horizon with a little drop-down list that specifies these regions. You were absolutely right before, Ivan, that this is pointing to two different Keystone endpoints, two different URLs. And if these are separate data centers, that's okay. And I don't think in this particular use case, there would be any distance limitations on all that because you're essentially interacting with two separate clouds. Now, if you want long distance vMotion, if you want all these things, then yes, you have to think about what is your RTT, what is your bandwidth between the two sites? Is this an active-active configuration or it's an active standby? Do I have SRM, maybe Site Recovery Manager, which are all other ancillary solutions offered by VMware? So I think that use case would dictate how the connectivity between these two data centers would work. But from an OpenStack perspective, you're actually interacting with two separate clouds. And I don't think distance or geographical location play a factor here.
That's one of the things that always comes up when you talk about building out a resource such as this is there's typically a lot of assumptions made about connectivity between the two things and how failover works and stuff like that. So I really wanted to sort of expose some of that as here are the things you need to think about when you plan this.
Absolutely.
Okay, now that you mentioned the abhorrent thing, the long distance vMotion, let's say someone actually does that. And now that vSphere supports cross vCenter vMotion, you can actually move a VM from one vCenter to the other vCenter in the other data center. Will that VM then appear in the other data center's OpenStack?
Today, it would not. Evacuate a VM from one data center and it disappears completely from under one of the OpenStack control planes and you move it. That is an out-of-band change that currently is not reconciled with what OpenStack knows. So that VM would essentially be orphaned from an OpenStack perspective at the destination side. It would be just like any other VM. So that would be an out-of-band operation that would not work in the current model with the current architecture.
And I guess the same thing happens with the universal objects in NSX, right?
Correct. All these universal objects, if say, for example, that you're using NSX inside one, NSX inside two, and you're using some universal objects to link the networking capabilities of these two sites, so you can have, you know, this multi-site connectivity, all of that is invisible to the Neutron integration plugin that we have today. So those logical switches would not be promoted to Neutron networks. Those universal routers would not be promoted to Neutron routers, and the universal firewall rules would not be promoted to Neutron security groups. So that's basically invisible. We also have some design constraints when you decide to share NSX with OpenStack workloads and non-OpenStack workloads. It is supported. We can do it. But there are some constraints in terms of the capacity clusters that you need to design, transport zones that you need to create. So as long as you stay within the guardrails of the validated solution, you're going to be fine. But to your question, yeah, those objects are totally invisible to Neutron today.
So do I understand correctly that you don't have to dedicate your VMware infrastructure to OpenStack? You can run an existing data center and then you just slap OpenStack on top of everything and spin up some VMs through OpenStack just to test the API or what have you, and the rest of your data center is invisible to OpenStack and operates like it did the day before.
That is 100% correct.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and hopefully this doesn't sound like a plug, but it's just capability that we're adding. In our latest version of VMware Integrated OpenStack, we're actually adding a little widget which has absolutely nothing to do with OpenStack. The purpose of that little software module is to provide a user an OpenStack-like CLI that is translated to a vSphere, vCenter SOAP API call. So you would do like Nova boot to boot a VM, and this little module would translate that to a corresponding API call that basically creates a VM in vCenter. And this is completely outside of VIO. The idea here is that we want to start getting people familiar with the OpenStack operational model that relies heavily on, for example, the CLI tools that are very popular. The main goal for offering this capability to the users is precisely to give them the option to, in a brownfield environment where they already have running applications, onboard OpenStack. So hopefully that adds a little bit more color to the use case. But the simple answer to the question is yes. You can share a brownfield vSphere environment and NSX environment with an OpenStack implementation, and it should all work fine. We want, in some cases, and compute is one example, we want dedicated clusters, though. I mean, it's the same vCenter, but you would have one cluster for OpenStack, and then you would leave your other VMs in a separate cluster. We require that the clusters for compute capacity in our OpenStack integrations be empty day one. So it is brownfield from the perspective that you're reutilizing the same vSphere and the same NSX, but it is greenfield from the perspective that OpenStack VMs will have to land on dedicated clusters.
But then as you create the tenant networks in NSX, they appear as new port groups, but you can tie the existing port groups to the provider networks in OpenStack, I guess.
That is 100% correct. And one thing that we're doing too is we're now supporting in our plugin, in our Neutron plugin, we support for you and Nick and the listeners that are familiar with NSX and vSphere networking technologies, we're supporting multiple transport zones and multiple virtual distributed switches. And we're doing this precisely to create segmentation if the user wants that. If they want to keep things completely separate, right, and create one VDS for my compute clusters where I have my regular applications and another VDS for the cluster that is dedicated to OpenStack, they can do that. And the Neutron plugin will be able to discern which VDS to use. This is not limited to one. We can have as many VDSs as you want registering Neutron. What that means is that a logical switch that I create in my OpenStack environment or in that maps to a Neutron network will appear as a distributed port group only on the VDS that I presented to the cluster where my OpenStack applications reside. All the other VDSs would not get that port group unless those clusters are in the same transport zone. So that's why we support multiple transport zones. So you can have a logical air gap from top to bottom in your environment. You're sharing vSphere, you're sharing NSX, but logically you're segmenting these clusters and VDSs and transport zones to create isolation.
So I could see some pretty interesting use cases for that. How large have you scaled that in testing, or how large has a customer scaled that to?
In terms of our largest customer?
Or lab, I mean, either way.
Unfortunately, I mean, I'm not at liberty of disclosing VM count or anything like that. What I can tell you is that our largest customer has surpassed our scalability limits. So we had to, you know, arrange like a special support agreement with those guys, and it's working fine, right? But they're actually 2x our capacity or something like that. But in our lab, what we validate, what we advertise, like I mentioned before, is 250 compute nodes, 250 hypervisors, and as many VMs as you can cram in those hypervisors. And in our test bed, that number today is 5,000.
How much logical separation have you created? That was really what my question was. I didn't frame it very
okay.
well. How much logical separation have you sliced that into as far as scaling goes?
So, okay, yes. In that case, we're limited by the numbers that are supported. If we're talking about VDS, by the numbers supported by vCenter. So it escapes it right now, but I think it's a very high number of virtual distributed switches. And in terms of transport zones, NSX today only supports 4. So you could create like 4 logical and separate entities in terms of your NSX integration.
Okay, interesting.
There's also a limit of 250 hypervisors per transport zone. You can see, all the numbers start to like make sense and match.
Yeah, I mean, that's still pretty good scaling, right? My experience with OpenStack is typically not, you know, it's not enterprise, it's not service provider, it's more research science, spinning up and spinning down resources as needed per whatever the experiment is, right? But the logical separation of those things is important because there may be implications to not having some of these things totally air-gapped, right? Or logically air-gapped, I guess, is more appropriate.
Yep.
So the large scaling of that is an interesting side effect of being able to do a lot of these things that I could see some definite use cases for in environments such as the ones I'm used to.
Yep. I don't know if you guys have seen the latest user survey that was conducted by the OpenStack Foundation, but there are some interesting tidbits there. And they talk about the average size of an OpenStack cloud. Obviously, when we talk about these massive data centers, I'm talking about the Walmarts of the world, I'm talking about Rackspace, I'm talking about eBay. Those are thousands or tens of thousands of compute nodes. But that is not the average OpenStack user. The average OpenStack cloud out there is around 100 compute nodes. In the enterprise, it's even lower than that.
If that's average and average includes Walmart and Rackspace, what's median?
Yes. I don't know how in the survey they got to that math, but you know, you can actually check these numbers. They're basically shared by the OpenStack Foundation, and they conduct this survey and they said, okay, this is my average cloud size. In the enterprise, we don't even see that many. We have definitely customers that are in the hundreds, right? We don't have any customers in the thousands, but our average customer for VMware OpenStack is probably around 50 to 60 compute nodes. And that in the enterprise is a fairly big size cloud, especially if you're very dense and depending on the application profile, 50, 60 hypervisors can actually host a lot of workloads. But that's what we're seeing. The OpenStack Foundation as a whole, yeah, they recently shared that average size. I was surprised to see that it's around 100 compute entities.
Yeah, that jives with what I've seen too. They're either hyperscale or they're what I would consider to be relatively small. There didn't seem to be a whole lot going on in the middle.
So who would be your typical enterprise customers? What would they be doing with OpenStack, and why would they use OpenStack?
Good question, Ivan. Our typical customer is looking at OpenStack. I'm just going to generalize, but of course, there's always exceptions because each use case is slightly different from the next one. But in general, what we're seeing with our enterprise customers is that they're using OpenStack. Let me start with the compute piece. There is this notion that OpenStack is really optimized for cloud-native applications, that you don't need all this HA and infrastructure reliability in the underlay because the application will take care of that. In the enterprise, that application is not a reality today. This platform three applications, ephemeral apps, et cetera, that are used maybe, you know, in use cases like CI/CD pipeline and things like that are not yet a reality, a general reality in the enterprise community. So what we're seeing when people use OpenStack with vSphere is they're hosting legacy apps, if I can use that term. They're hosting platform two applications, the applications that some people call pets, right, and not cattle. These applications that are long-lived, that you know by IP and FQDN, that has to have a routable IP because I need to reach it at all times, that maybe is dual home and has a NIC for front-end services and a back-end NIC for patching and monitoring or whatever. So that is the typical application that we see in the enterprise. And that application dictates the networking that Neutron provides for that application. And I'll give you the most common example. On the compute side, that is the application profile that by far we see being used with our OpenStack when running OpenStack with vSphere. On the networking side, that application dictates the networking topologies. So in the example that I'm going to give you is if my application has a routable IP within my environment and I'm using Neutron routers, chances are that I'm going to want to disable NAT on that router and somehow interconnect those subnets or advertise those subnets to the rest of my corporate network. And then you start facing some realities in terms of what Neutron can and cannot do. NSX, our routers, NSX itself supports OSPF and BGP, but Neutron doesn't. Or it does now in Liberty, but it's very much experimental. It is not considered to be stable. There is a BGP speaker in Neutron in Liberty, but I don't think it is being widely used. So let's say for a second that dynamic routing is not there in OpenStack. Well, how do you reconcile the need for routable IP subnets with lack of dynamic routing support, which, you know, would tremendously facilitate the integration with your corporate network? So those are some of the challenges that we're facing, right? And static routing can only get you so far. We're seeing that the application dictates the networking. That is just one example of that.
In theory, obviously, you could go into NSX Manager and fix the configuration of the router, right?
That is correct. And that happens to be a harmless change, but it's one that we do not support or recommend anyways, because it is an out-of-band change. And I feel very passionately about this, and I would be very interested in hearing your counter arguments. If you decided that OpenStack is your cloud consumption layer, and you find yourself going around OpenStack to enable features directly on the infrastructure that OpenStack doesn't support, I would argue that you didn't select the right cloud platform. That's why when I talk OpenStack to my customers and NSX and all that, before I even want to sell them anything, I want to make sure that they go into this with their eyes wide open, because you don't accidentally do OpenStack. It's very unforgiving, right? That's why I volunteer all this information. Hey, just know that in Neutron, this is what you get. Yes, in NSX, we have VPN support and we have all these things, but in Neutron, this is actually what Neutron can consume and can do. And then, you know, it's up to a customer to make a determination on whether or not that's a table stakes feature. It's not all bad news. Neutron is extensible. The APIs in OpenStack do provide an extensibility model. So without violating the basic tenet of OpenStack, which is keep the API open, keep the API well documented, the OpenStack Foundation, right, had the presence of mind to allow for extensions to the API. And these extensions can be actually consumed in the form of metadata tagging or maybe additional attributes, right? So you can basically create private API calls. They're still implemented in Neutron, so you don't have to talk directly to NSX or vSphere, but you could create a private API call that actually gets translated and that creates a specific behavior in your environment. For dynamic routing, we don't have such an API call, but I'm going to give you an example of an API call. We, for example, have supported distributed routers in NSX for a long time. The same distributed routing support in OpenStack proper, it's there, but we had it way before OpenStack Neutron did. So how do we give the tenant the ability to benefit from this very interesting feature that optimizes east-west traffic engineering in routed topologies? How do we offer that without having to go outside of Neutron? Well, we create an API extension. You basically pass in your API call, you pass a parameter called distributed, you flip that switch to true, and now Neutron ingests that, the plugin translates that into an NSX call that creates a distributed router. So the tenant is consuming Neutron. He's just using attributes that are specific to our technology. And by the way, this is not unique to VMware. Cisco does it, everybody does it. If you want to enable CDP from Neutron, there is a command to do that. There is a dash dash attribute that you make from Neutron that actually enables, for example, and I'm not picking on Cisco, I'm just listing that as an example, enables CDP. But for dynamic routing, we don't have such an API call because we knew that dynamic routing was eventually going to make it into the core services of Neutron. And like I mentioned, it is there as an experimental feature in Liberty.
I think you touched on something that's important. It's not really specific to this, but I like to reiterate this whenever I hear someone else say it. I do agree with you that if you're going outside of the realm of what the product or platform is, then perhaps you are using the wrong tool. But saying that and actually doing that are very difficult, especially when it comes to things that, oh, this one tiny little thing isn't exactly what I want, but there's nothing else out there that does it. That's when you start getting into the gray areas that are, well, I can enable this and I know it'll work, but now it's not supported, right? And so there's that fine line. But anytime I hear anyone say that, I always repeat it because it's very important. I've worked in environments in the past where they buy a screwdriver and then they want to use it to bang nails in. And then it doesn't work. And then there's a whole big to-do about, oh, this thing doesn't work and it's a problem and it doesn't do what they said, except for you're trying to do something with it that wasn't really supposed to do to begin with. But that's a powerful statement. And I am in 100% agreement with that, with the caveat that I will often break my own rule.
Absolutely. And we do too. We do too. If I'm being absolutely honest, we've had bugs and things that happen. Maybe the information that is in the NSX database got out of sync with what's in the Neutron database, and you have to reconcile the two. You have to go out of hand and enable stuff. We've had that all the time. I'll give you an example. This particular customer wanted to support search domains in the DHCP address scopes, right? The ability to, you know, specify a domain so when you refer to an application or an IP endpoint by name, you don't have to basically type out the entire FQDN. Well, while we were working on the implementation in the plugin, what we'd recommended to his customers is go outside of OpenStack and just enable that in the DHCP server. So we break our own rule.
I mean, everybody does it, you know, at one point or another, but saying it and recognizing the fact that you're doing it is important, I think.
Yes. You know,
because then it's not a surprise later.
So let's wrap it up right here. Marcus, if someone wants to know more about what you're doing, is there any way to get a demo version of the VMware's integrated OpenStack, or how can one kick the tires?
Yes. If you're a VMware customer today and you have what we call an Enterprise Plus license, and by the way, we're relaxing some of the licensing requirements. But if you're an Enterprise Plus customer of VMware today, you're already entitled to VMware Integrated OpenStack. It's a free license. You can download it and use it. VMware Integrated OpenStack also works in a what I would call testing mode, or called VDS mode. You don't get any of the advanced Neutron workflows that are offered when you use NSX. You don't get load balancing as a service. You don't get metadata support. But you get an OpenStack that has some basic networking capabilities and that can help you get accustomed to our OpenStack and understand, you know, how it gets deployed, how it gets consumed. So if you go to VMware, the VMware download product page, you can download VIO today. We're relaxing the licensing requirements and we're going to bring it all the way down to standard. So pretty much any VMware customer in the short term will be able to download VIO and use it free of charge. Now, if you use it in VDS mode, that is something that we do not support in production. That is basically just to kick the tires and what you were asking about.
Okay, so if you want to use NSX, you need Enterprise Plus license anyway, right?
That also changed. Maybe that's something that we want to update everybody on in a separate session, but that has also changed. Now we have tiers of licenses for NSX, from standard to enterprise advanced or advanced plus. It escapes me a little bit. It was literally announced a few days ago. So the Enterprise Plus is no longer the only license tier that enables NSX, but you're not entitled to NSX if you have these licenses. You pay for NSX at an additional cost, regardless of your license structure. What this new license tier means is that NSX will work even if you're not Enterprise Plus. And hopefully that makes sense.
Okay, we really need to do another session on this, but 30-second question. Doesn't NSX rely on the distributed switch, which is only available in Enterprise Plus?
Very astute observation. What we're doing when you buy NSX for other vSphere environments that are not licensed for Enterprise Plus is, guess what? We give you VDS.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay, Marcus, if people want to ask you questions and get more information, how can they reach you?
Let me give everybody my Twitter handle first, because I'm relatively new to Twitter and I'm trying to have more followers. It's @netvirt, NETVIRT. My VMware email is hernandezm@vmware.com. And please, if you're listening, feel free to reach out. I'm very approachable and I'll be happy to have a conversation about this or any other topic related to our products and platforms.
Oh, and by the way, I just increased your followers count by one.
Thank you. I'll reciprocate.
Marcus, thank you for this update. It's really been great. And whenever you have something new about OpenStack, let us know.
I will, Ivan. Thank you, Ivan. Thank you, Nick, for the opportunity to reach out to your listeners. I look forward to our next engagement. Thank you so much.
And Nick, where can people find you?
Hiding in the deep, dark corners of cyberspace. Yeah, I'm on Twitter, and I'm usually relatively active on there, @Baralio, just my last name. And then I also blog at forwardingplane.net on occasion.
Perfect. Thank you. I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and you can find me at ipspace.net. And if you like this podcast, just go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find links to the latest episodes. And there's this more link, which gives you all 50-odd episodes. On the same page, you'll also find blog posts, presentations, videos, books, workshops, everything you need to get your SDN career started. And do keep in mind, we call it software-defined, but you know what the Nova Compute thing of OpenStack runs on? It's actually hardware.